Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion on sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
And I'm Annie Warmke.
And we are from Blue Rock Station, a sustainable living center located in beautiful southeastern Ohio on 40 acres with a mule. What do you know? And today we're going to talk about earthships, or living in a house made of trash. So, Annie, you were the motivation in building the earthship at Blue Rock Station. So why the heck did we do that?
Well, some days I'm not sure. But most of the time, I'm pretty keen about it. Well, when we left Athens, Ohio in 1982, we were looking for the end of the rainbow, maybe, and we moved to Florida because there was a recession. And you could have been a PhD, but you would have been sacking groceries at the A&P. So when we went to Florida, it was a really interesting time for things like the starting of domestic violence projects, particularly in rural areas and things like that. But we were always longing to be in the country, in the North, in some form or fashion. And so after we made our success in business and life, we said, let's find a place where we can go.
And after fame and fortune, everybody returns to Athens, Ohio, no doubt.
Well, we didn't come back to Athens, Ohio, but we definitely came back to Ohio, to an area south of Zanesville. And the reason we went there is because our granddaughter was going to be born. And that was a pretty exciting, crazy time for us, too, in every way. So when we bought the land, we originally thought that we would use it as a retreat center for our family and our friends and have a place to come together a few times a year to have fun and just, you know, relax. But then when our granddaughter was born, that just really changed a lot of things because, for one thing, we became the parents. And so when our granddaughter was about 5 months old, she was laying on my belly one day, and I'd been thinking a lot about what kind of a place could we build? Because I felt like, and who knows why this was in my head, but I felt like we ought to build something that would make a difference for a lot of people in the region and not just for our family and friends. So when that day when Catlin was laying on my bed, I was listening to community radio out of Tampa, Florida, and I heard the architect Michael Reynolds talk about buildings out of clean garbage and clean waste. And I knew immediately that's exactly what I wanted to do. And then we had to figure out how to do it. And that's how it all began. And then fortunately for me, you went along with the plan. And here we are today, all these years later, having more than 35,000 people walk through the living room, and it's really made a living for us. So,
well, before we go too deeply into, you know, our experience with this, maybe we ought to talk about what exactly is an earthship, and if those folks who are listening who aren't familiar with it, it was a concept developed by Michael Reynolds, the architect out of Taos, New Mexico, and he really argued that most structures are akin to an individual living on life support. You know, if you remove the support structure like the electricity, the sewer system, the water system, these are the life support of the building, then the patient is dead. So why not build a structure that utilizes natural processes like passive solar, which is just sunlight coming through windows, thermal mass, which is what you experience when you go into a cave. There's composting toilets, gray water recycling, rainwater harvesting, all of these systems that are natural and for the most part passive. And if you're going to build a building that utilizes these, why not build it out of things that people are throwing away? So that's the concept behind it.
But you know what? That's not what I got at all. Really thought it was the fact that it's like a spaceship and it has to be self-reliant, and it's going to hover on the earth because it doesn't have a footer, and that's one of the things that I remembered when we visited the architect that he talked about.
Well, that's much too new age for me. I'm gonna stick with the scientific aspect of it. It's natural processes made of unwanted material. Sort of like me, I think. You know, a natural process.
I think that's true.
Unwanted material. So yeah. So we went off. We went to Taos. We looked at the facility. Said, okay, this is great. You know, there's something very, very welcoming about rooms and buildings that are not square. You know, they have the building has a solidity to it. I don't know how to explain it. It to me, it's like the difference between a beautiful hand thrown piece of pottery and a 5-cent mug that is just kicked off a production line. You know, they both do the same thing, but one just feels better. So,
well, the rooms are called U's by the architect, and I always feel like part of what makes it feel welcoming is it is made of natural materials, but also we are round. And so by
some of us are more round than others.
Well, so. I know, especially mm-hmm. you, but that's another episode. So, but anyway, I think that's a lot of it. And people often remark when they come on tour that it is a very welcoming place and a very peaceful feeling place.
Mm-hmm. And so, it's solid. It feels substantial.
Yeah, like it's taking care of you, which is exactly what it does. So I think the idea of building with the materials that we use, like with tires filled with clay, and to create this enormous wall, so to speak, I do think that helps to make you feel secure and know that the building's going to take care of you, because it keeps you warm when you need to be warm and it's cooling when it needs to be cooling. So,
well, and the Earthship that we built, you know, I know we talked about it and we really thought that, you know, Michael Reynolds has been doing this a long time. You heard him on the radio. There was a PBS special with him with Dennis Weaver, you know, from the old actor who was on the show McLeod. And so it turned out we were actually one of the very early adopters when we went out there. I think it was, 1996 when we went out to Taos?
I think it was 95 because we started the house in 96.
Okay. And so we came back. And that sort of brings the other question. Like everything that we've ever done in our life that's meaningful and important, we had no idea what we were doing when we got into it. You know, if we had, we would have run the other direction, probably. It's one of those things that is such a big project and such a lot of work, and you would never, ever have anticipated just how much work going in. But I, for one, am very happy that we did it, because coming out on the other side of it is nice. But I don't know that we'd do it again, you know.
I think we'd do it again because...
Well, then we're slow learners.
So. I think we would have built a tiny building first, and then we might have talked ourselves out of it. But I think it represents a lot of things in life, and it represents a lot of the values that we hold. And it was a huge undertaking, and it's still a huge undertaking. In terms of how we are finishing it up, because we haven't completely finished everything. Mm-hmm. But I think it was well worth the investment and of time and effort, and it's been fun. You know, it's brought a lot of interesting people into our lives who have become friends. That house has been a powerful, important thing. We'd have to do it again.
Sure.
What would we do in its place?
Well, it's definitely the cornerstone of Blue Rock Station and quite a draw. I mean, a lot of people have heard about Earthships, and to actually get to walk through one, I mean, to my knowledge, ours is probably the only Earthship that I'm aware of that's open to the public.
Except in Taos.
Yeah, except in Taos, where you can go to the start of it all and walk through some of those buildings. So to describe it a little further, the house that we're talking about, our home, is actually a 2,200 square foot building. We used about 2,500 tires or so now in the construction of that. The tires are filled with earth, and then you take a sledgehammer and you pound that earth until you're essentially making a 200-pound brick of earth and clay, and the tire is the form. But those tires are structural and load-bearing. And when we've had workshops and the like, you know, it's always fun to see that the men stand around trying to figure out some way to automate the process. You know, it's like there's got to be some sort of tool you can use to make this. And, of course, the women just keep working and the men all, you know, sit back and discuss how to make it easier while the women do the work, which to my way of thinking is eminently fair. So, okay,
where did you come up with that analogy?
Well, you know, it's part of my warped philosophy on life. So one of the things a lot of people will ask us, of course, is how long did this take to build when they come and walk through? And of course, our flip answer is always, you know, how deep is a hole? How long is a string? You know,
well, that's
it's
your
not
flip
finished.
Answer. Yeah. I just say I don't really know because, in fact, the house is part of our life. And so we're living our life as we work on it and a number of other things. And so it doesn't really matter how long it took or whatever. We weren't building it so that we could teach other people we were building it for ourselves because we wanted to have something that made a difference. And one of the things that was fascinating in working on the house in the summers was the amount of people that came to visit. And the first open house we had, which was before we even had the glass in the windows on the face, over 450 people showed up. And that told me that we were onto something, even though it seemed wild and crazy, that house, if we build it, people would come. And there would be ways that we could make money from living in that house. And eventually we did determine, after we came back to Ohio, that we could hold workshops. And we did hold workshops in the beginning because I needed people to work on the weekends and nobody wanted to work on the weekends. So I put a little thing on the internet, which was pretty new too at the time, and asked people to pay me $75 and I would teach them how to build tire walls and bottle walls. And we had more people than we needed that came those weekends and helped build. So I think that the technology, the techniques that are used in the house speak to people. They speak to that pioneering spirit, but also they see the science, they see the logic of reusing materials that create and use passive systems.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of zoning issues came up? I mean, every county is going to be different. I mean, we're a patchwork of laws and regulations. But I know from our experience, you dealt with those folks. And what were the big issues you had to deal with?
Well, before I say that, I think that it's important if you're looking for a piece of land to consider and find out what the township says if it's in a rural area, which more than likely that's where it's going to be because an urban area isn't going to accept a concept of an heirship. But in a rural area, that you're going to need to worry about the township, the county, and, of course, the state guidelines, not just for zoning, but also health department issues and things like that. So in those days, in the late 1990s, all we had to do was have two things. We had to have a letter, a permit from the EPA to possess more than 100 tires. And then we also had to have a plumbing permit, which the plumber, we did use a professional plumber for that particular part of the project. And so he had to pull a permit, and then we had to have an inspection. And that was pretty much it. And so it wasn't that difficult. It was funny, though, because when we wanted to get the EPA permit, we had to do two things. One is we had to write the letter, and once they sent a letter back saying we could have the tires, they said, well, we had to keep them covered because there's a special kind of mosquito that liked to breed when there was wet water in the tires. The EPA also paid to transport the tires that we needed from an illegal dump site. So the first day we started the build, the EPA car pulled up to see what we were doing, and I was very nervous about it, and out walked a woman. And she stood at the edge of where the construction site was, and she just laughed and laughed and laughed because she said nobody had ever asked for a permit and actually done what they said they were going to do, and here we were building a house out of tires.
Okay, well, you are listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke, and we are both here reminding you that It is indeed the end of the world as we know it, and thank God. You know, I mean, this is the thing that we're dealing with every day when we talk about sustainability is that the systems that have worked for many decades are no longer working, and we're seeing this in all aspects. And one of those is going to be housing. And we're today talking about Earthships. And the thing I like about the Earthship, of course, is it provides a really nice, comfortable home. And it's not just zero waste or zero carbon. It's kind of a negative because you're taking things people were going to throw away and using those. I mean, you're never going to be a purist. There's a lot of things.
Oh, I am. Well, come on.
Pure as the driven snow. But, let's talk a little bit about the utilities, because that's one of the features when you talk of the concept that most homes are hooked up to life support. Well, it follows that an Earthship has to be fairly independent. So water. Let's talk about water at the moment. How does an Earthship work as far as providing water?
Well, we collect the water off of about half of the original building. So that gives us the potential, and you can go online and look this up to see what your roof footprint is and how much water you potentially can collect. You can look it up online. Ours has the potential around 128,000 gallons of water a year. So we have a cistern that's made of rammed earth tires and finished off like a swimming pool. And it holds roughly 5,000 gallons of water. So that's one way. We also collect water off of other roofs. And so we're rich in water.
Well, I always think it's funny when people come and they'll say, oh, you mean you can drink rainwater? And we're like, well, you're drinking Mountain Dew, you know. I mean, this is
somebody peed in there.
let's hope not. But at
it
least
seems like it.
The rainwater. I mean, rainwater is water. I mean, it's what people have drunk for. And fortunately for us, of course, we live in an area that's not downwind from any large pollution source.
Not that we know of.
Not that we know of.
But yet. The other thing I will say is that it's full of really healthy bacteria, and that is super good. So we collect rainwater, and it goes through just a sediment filter, so we're not filtering it in any other way. And then when we're finished with the water, it goes into a gray water system that filters it through sand and gravel and then charcoal, and then holds it at the end of a big tank we call wetland. And that's terrific because that water is potable, and we have had it tested twice. So if we needed to, which we don't, we could pump that water back out of there and put it in the cistern, and it would be usable. A cistern's an amazing living body, and it has to have balance, just like everything in life, just like your body, just like everything. And so that cistern has worked double duty for us, and we've only had to pump it to clean it twice since 1997 or 98. So I think it's a really great system, and I'm very happy to have water that comes out of there.
And of course, the another feature of this, which we've had many discussions on, is of course, why are the toilets in a home not a separate utility from the rest of the water system? And with the Earthship, it utilizes composting toilets, which we'll talk about in another show. But that separates all of the what they would refer to as black water waste from the gray water. So if you wash dishes or take a shower, the water that you've used is pretty clean and can be used for other things such as watering your garden or
gray water is really good. It also kills insects.
Especially after I took a shower, it'll kill and knock them dead. It's better than the can of Raid. So, all right. So we have the water and the waste, and then of course heating is a big issue, and to a lesser extent cooling. So the home heats itself through passive solar.
Explain passive solar. Well, passive solar. Because that's like a buzz.
Yeah, every cat knows what passive solar
is,
right?
Yes,
there's
that's
a window,
true.
There's sunlight, you sit in the sunlight, and you warm up. In fact, one of the lines that Michael Reynolds liked to say is, you know, people would say, how do you get your ideas? And he says, well, I was looking at my dog, you know, and when my dog is hot, he sits in the shade. And when he's cold,
he has a Texas accent, Jay. He does not sound like that at all.
People don't know. So pretend that's Michael Reynolds. Anyway,
so lovely Texas accent.
So why aren't architects as smart as a dog? You know, I mean, that's an issue. We do not design our buildings for the location that they are situated at and the orientation that they're situated at and the purpose for which they're situated. So we become so disconnected with the natural cycles and the natural effect of climate on a building because we've artificially hooked it up to life support. So architects are more interested in winning some award from some magazine than providing a structure that is going to fit with the natural environment. And my soapbox is now set.
I know.
And
now that all the architects are going to, you know, like,
they don't listen. They don't listen to the radio.
Okay, that's good.
They receive all of their orders directly from on high.
But I wanted to say, kind of like doctors. Well, sorry. I wanted to say that, just say something about how we decided where we would put the building. Because the property we have, even though it's quite large, we have a challenge in that there are like these fingers, so they jut out and they're up, and then everything else is down in the holler. So we had one place in particular, but that was full of trees, and we were trying to figure out what we would do. So we made a compass with two befores, and we came back different times of the year to look at the compass that we had created out of that. And it was clear to us, even though everybody said you're going to have to cut the trees down, but the miracle is that deciduous trees lose their leaves when we needed heat. So the sun was hitting the site exactly the way we needed it to when we needed warmth, and hitting it exactly the way we needed it to when we needed it to be cool. Mm-hmm. And that's really great. The other thing it has to do with how we deal with heat and cooling is that the house, the back wall of the house, is bermed. It has insulation, rigid insulation, and then it has an enormous amount of clay that is against the back of the house. So when the sun comes through the windows and hits the wall, the way it's designed to do in the wintertime, the wall collects up, which is the tires, collects up the heat, and then that heat cannot escape out the back of the house, so it radiates back into the room over a period of time, depending on how long the sun was on the wall. So it all works very well, as long as the earth keeps turning, and Mr. Trump doesn't stop that for some reason, we'll be in really great shape for the house to stay nice and hot in the winter and nice and cool in the summer.
Right. And the thermal mass that you're talking about, the fact that the earth is absorbing and then radiating out back its heat, really prevents the building from getting below about 55 degrees.
Right.
So it could be minus 20 degrees outside. Inside the building, it will be 55 at a minimum. And that's a big deal when you're trying to heat the inside of a home in the wintertime, because now you only have to raise the temperature to whatever you find comfortable from 55 degrees as opposed to, say, minus 20. So we can heat it, and I would find it comfortable at about 62, and you would find it comfortable about 93. And so
somewhere in between.
Somewhere in between is where you and the cat sit in front of the wood stove.
That's
and
right.
Everybody's happy. So we have passive heat and cooling. We have rainwater for our water. We have composting toilets for the sewer system, essentially, and gray water recycling for the gray water. And then really the only other utility was electricity. And in 2014, we did install a solar array, so we are as pure can be.
No, that's just me, not you.
Okay.
You have insects and
you
things.
You are as pure can be, and we are about as net neutral as we can be. So, a lot of people who come visit, they'll say, this is a very difficult lifestyle. I don't think I could do that. And
wait,
I know
what's
our reaction.
Difficult?
I know, that's
we don't
our reaction.
Get it.
And it's like, Why is it difficult? You know, it's no more difficult to hang your laundry out on a sunny day as it is on a rainy day. It's just that it's more efficient and effective if the sun
I'm
is shining.
Hang it out on a rainy day. You just wait to do the laundry.
This is America, you know. You got
to
see.
It's your right to hang it out.
Don't assume anything.
So. Okay. Well, so I think the challenge for people is is really about who we are personally in terms of what our values are. So we don't really have access to television, although we do watch films, but we choose what we are going to put into our brains and our souls. And we work hard every day, which I think is a challenge, but we're working for ourselves. And that's very different than working for somebody else. So I know we had a group of kids that came one time from inner city. What we have people come from inner city often, but these kids came and they were asking me a lot of questions about, you know, how we lived and about the house and everything. And then at one point I said, I'm the richest woman in the world. And they got all excited. They're like, 9 and 10 years old. And they started asking a lot of questions. And then one of the parents who had come said, no, she's kidding. Because she's not talking about money. And I said, no, I'm not kidding. And then she asked me, what did I give up to live there? And I said, nothing. I've gained everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is one of the hearts of sustainability. Sustainability is not about giving anything up. It's really about living your life more aware. You know, it's not harder to live. It's not less comfortable to have the lights off in a room that you are not in. It's not less comfortable to have a white roof as opposed to a black roof that saves energy. These are just being aware of how systems work and then designing your home and your lifestyle to be as light on the earth as you can be. You know, I think it really is an awareness kind of thing. It's not a giving anything up. It's not any kind of discomfort.
But I think you don't like the insects.
Well, the insects, you know, I've come to terms with bugs, you know. Bugs are my friend.
No spraying for insects, and we live next to the forest.
You know, one of the things that I've come to realize, I think, in your home is that in order to have a home that has no bugs or insects in it, the environment has to be so toxic as to be damaging to you as well. If your house will kill the bugs, it'll kill you. So, you know, you just have to deflect them. You know, we're going to do jujitsu pest control. You know, try and get them to go somewhere else.
Or Zen pest control.
Yes. we'll see how that works. Stay tuned on that. That'll be another show. So
I hope so.
So is there anything you would do different in about 1 minute here, telling us what you would do differently if we had it to do over?
No, there's nothing. I love my life. I love the house. I would like to be able to hang pictures on the wall.
Because it is hard to hang photos on an earth plastered wall.
That's right. It messes it up too badly.
Okay. Well, you've been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. Thanks for spending a bit of time with us. And as your grandmother probably told you at one point, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
play nice with others, clean up your own mess, and eat your vegetables.
Okay. Till next time.
Power will be revealed. Mother Earth will sing, and her children will be healed.